So he then sees that. So then he says, hence for those who want liberation, the infallible supreme instructions are indeed the great scriptures. Nevertheless, it is possible that due to poor intelligence, etc., one cannot reach certainty through relying only on these scriptures as supreme instructions, whereby one should seek certainty with respect to them thinking, or seek certainty regarding them by relying on the excellent practical guidance. But one should not think that the great scriptures do not contain the heart of the matter, because they only outline external knowledge, while the practical guidance is supreme, because it presents the inner meaning. And then it also says that so the practitioner should be able to integrate or take into your own practice all the instructions. So where it requires single-pointed meditation, you have to do that. And where the need for the analytical meditation, you have to engage as demanded. So sometimes we have a mistaken idea of thinking taking meditation is something simply remaining idle and sitting upright and then not thinking anything. So that is actually mistaken. So basically, the very practice of Buddhism is meant for bringing about transformation of one's mind, to transform that undisciplined state of mind into transformation, transformed state. So this dharma in Tibetan, or the teaching in Tibetan, is called chö. So it means they bring about transformation. And whereas in Sanskrit, dharma means uphold, or hold someone from. holding someone from suffering, which you are undesirous of, by eliminating the very causes of those sufferings. For example, by abandoning the 10 non-virtuous actions like killing and so forth. Because of abandoning the action of killing, you stop the sin, or you stop the demerit of killing someone. And as such, you are being held, you are being saved from engaging in that negative action. Applying this remedy or antidote to this negative emotions, that you are being saved from that, and then led to this the state of the cessation of that very negative emotion through the power of the direct antidote. So that very antidote which encounters the negative emotions, and that state of cessation which saves the individual practitioner from the falls of the delusions and so forth. So these two comprise the actual dharma, or the actual teaching. So this would be the explanation of teaching in terms of the Sanskrit word of the teaching, that is dharma. So whereas if you understand this teaching in terms from the Tibetan translation point of view, that is chö, it means transformation. So this this transformation of the mind is not something cannot be something done through mere kind of force or external force by kind of threatening someone. So for example, if you take into consideration the communist ancient regimes like Karl Marx, Lenin, and so forth, so they try to impose all kind of rules and so forth without the intention, without the desire of the individual person. And because of this, that you cannot actually bring about actual transformation from within. So, for example, if it so happens that the teacher happened to be so wrathful And then the student also very talkative. So then he would assume a great silence in front of his teacher. So, but that kind of assuming silence is something very superficial. It's not something his own kind of inner desire to bring about this transformation. It is because of this that when he actually goes away from his teacher, again he will relapse with his talkative nature. So these tell us that unless there is an inner desire to bring about transformation, it is impossible, however hard one may try to impose from external, by way of external conditions, it is impossible to bring about transformation. So this transformation in the Tibetan, we get from the Tibetan word, chu, for the word for teaching. So that should be the transformation should be something from within, something out of desire, out of liking, out of delight in bringing about that transformation of mind. Thus, through summarizing all the topics of the past set out in the excellent teachings and commentaries, starting from how to rely on a spiritual teacher up to calm abiding and spiritual insight, they are all condensed into the steps of practical application in terms of performing stabilizing meditation, where stabilizing meditation is required, and analyzing with the wisdom of individual investigation, where analytical meditation is required. Thereby, these instructions guide one so that all the excellent teachings present themselves as instructions, then the certainty develops that they should be understood as supreme instructions, and the misconception that they should be understood as mere background knowledge for the Dharma rather than as actual instruction is completely reversed. So for such kind of transformation to occur, you must have an inner kind of delight from within. So in order to arise such kind of delight in that object of meditation, so you must know the faulty side of the object and the quality side of the object. So realizing as to how the positive qualities of the mind would have the benefit to you in the long run, and how the negative states of the mind, they are very destructive. And by seeing the qualities of these virtuous or the positive minds and seeing the demerits of the unvirtuous states of the mind, so such kind of reflection are qualified as the analytical meditation. So in order to have a proper, genuine analytical meditation, it is very crucial to have an unbiased state of mind. So Lama Tsongkhapa, in one of his texts, he says that the proper disciple should have unbiased way of thinking, attitude. So because right from the outset, if you take for granted that something is better, and then just taking that for granted, and then if you undertake the analysis would be very much biased. So as such, the reality outside there, whether or not that is good or bad, can be determined only by a mind of unbiased attitude. And there is such kind of it is impossible that you can arrive at such a proper conclusion or arriving or disclosing the actual reality if you have the sense of a biased attitude. So it is because of this that we like happiness, because of this that we have to engage in those things which brings about happiness to you. And whereas since that you dislike suffering as such, we are to eradicate those things which are harmful, which bring about the painful experiences to you. So because it is said in the 400th stanza by Aryadeva, it says that the proper analysis or proper disciple should have a sense of unbiased attitude. First, without that, it is impossible that you can arrive at the proper reality. And secondly, you must have a proper wisdom or quite a good wisdom. So without wisdom, it is impossible that you can carry on a wise analysis. And a third quality is that one must have to have a sense of delight in engaging in that practice. So as such, the unbiased attitude is very crucial for someone who is to practice Bodhidharma. So because right from the beginning, if you have the attitude that, Buddhism is something marvelous without undertaking any analysis, investigation as to whether or not it is good, then again, that is biased. So this quality, the unbiased attitude, is very crucial for a Buddhist practitioner. The qualities of a proper disciple, as stated in the 400 stanzas, the first one is unbiased attitude. Second one, with wisdom, and third one, hidden delight in the practice. So this meditation is not is to be understood in two different ways. The placement or placement meditation or single-pointed meditation and the analytical meditation. So the analytical meditation analyzes this part. So it actually demands the actual investigation, proper investigation through unbiased attitude and the meditation. So the next half of this meditation, it means habituation or familiarization in that virtuous object. So here, when you are actually analyzing on a virtuous object in a very unbiased way, so that is what we call as analytical meditation. So we leave here for today.